Welcome to the BCMA Podcast webinar series. This podcast is converted webinar audio.
Great. And let's get started. Wonderful. So folks should be filtering in now. Oh, I see some participants joining. That's lovely. It's always a good sign. Great. Good. Well, I'm just going to give folks a few moments to filter in as we just turned 12 o'clock. And then we'll get started. Lovely. More folks joining us. That's great. Alrighty. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the British Columbia Museums Association webinar. My name is Loretta Kelbert, and I will be your host for today. Today's webinar topic is Demystifying Unions, presented by Carrie Michaels, Executive Vice President of the BCGEU. Before we begin, I'd like to acknowledge that as an organization of provincial scope, the BCMA recognizes that its members, today's presenters and attendees occupy the lands and territories of BC's Indigenous people. We ask all of you to reflect on the places where you reside and work and to respect the diversity of cultures and experiences that form its richness. I'm joining you today from the traditional unceded lands of the Lekwungen people, and I invite you to post your name and where you're joining from in the chat. This webinar is presented as part of this year's conference theme of collaboration, and thanks to the British Columbia General Employees Unions for sponsoring. The BCGEU is one of the largest and most diverse unions in BC, representing over 80,000 members in 550 bargaining units in the private sector and public services. Be sure to check out our conference sessions tomorrow, including something I'm most excited about, which is Weaving Our Stories Together, presented by Indigenous Cultural Heritage Specialist Kamala Todd. As I mentioned, my name is Loretta Kelbert. My pronouns are she, her, and I'm your host for today. I'm also the BCMA's programs coordinator. I have my camera off, but I'm just gonna do a visual description of myself. There's a photo of myself on the screen. I have long, blonde, straight hair tossed over my shoulder. I have very pale, fair skin and blue eyes, and I'm smiling at you with my mouth open so you can see lovely row of teeth. I'm wearing a burgundy corduroy shirt jacket over top of a striped sweater. The sweater is brown, beige, purple, and fuchsia. The slides that we're using today are white and light blue with gray text, and it's just summarizing in text some of the things I'm saying to you verbally. Now, if you need any assistance today, please do reach out. I can't always check my email during these webinars. So we do ask that you email Vanessa at operations@museum.bc.ca, or if you reach out to the general BCMA email address, sometimes folks catch that before I do in mine. But do try to check my email when I can during the webinars. So it might just take a few moments to hear back from me. Just a little housekeeping on how to use a webinar in Zoom. Please pose your questions or make comments in the chat. If you can't find the chat or the Q&A button, you can hover your mouse at the top or bottom of the screen and the taskbar should emerge. That taskbar is also where you will find the live transcript button as we have closed captioning enabled today. During our Q&A portion at the end of the session today, if you would like to pose your question verbally, just because it's a very lengthy or detailed question, you can raise your hand and I can unmute you so you can pose that question verbally, and that raise hand button should be in that taskbar as well. And it's my pleasure to pass the slides now on over to Carrie. So Carrie, I'm gonna stop sharing my slides and let you take it away.
Great, thank you so much. And I'm really excited to be here today with all of you. I'm just going to take a moment to share my slides. And I am using this nifty new feature that I've learned about where I share it as a background. So hopefully that's working for all of you to see. And yeah, I'll go ahead and get started. I really appreciate you taking the time to be here. this afternoon for this webinar. And I also want to thank the BC Museums Association for inviting us to present to you on demystifying unions. This is something that I think is really important and is particularly topical, as many of you may be aware of, you know, around the world, and particularly in the last few years, you know, a lot of workers talking about unionizing, and it's important for us to understand, you know, what does that look like? What does it mean? So before we get started, I just wanted to introduce myself a bit more. So as was mentioned, I'm with the BC General Employees Union as one of the executive vice presidents. My pronouns are she and her, and today I'm coming to you from the unceded and occupied lands of the Musqueam, the Squamish, and the Tsleil-Waututh peoples, whose lands were never surrendered under any form of law and remains occupied to this day. A bit about what we're going to go over today. So we're going to talk about what a union is, what are the benefits of forming a union, and what does the process look like to join a union in BC? I have personally gone through this process myself. So back in 2011, I worked at the Kwantlen University Student Association. I worked as the records coordinator and archivist. We're a nonprofit student society. And I actually reached out to the BCGEU and asked them about joining because my coworkers and I in particular were having a really difficult situation at work where our employer was looking to fire a bunch of us, and there was a lot of mismanagement happening, but we also had a lot of inequities within our workplace. You know, we talked to each other, and you know, there was very varying levels of wages and benefits, and some of us were getting retirement savings deposited and some of us weren't. And so we really wanted to see some consistency in our workplace. And so I've had my own experience in kind of what this looks like, and I'm hoping you know, some of that will be illuminating for folks who may not have actually been process before. There may be people in this who have had experiences in unions or forming a union, and I hope that during the Q&A we can kind of have a bit more of a discussion about that. But this is what we're going to go over. We also, I wanted to just mention as well, there are many different reasons why workers will look to form a union in their workplace. In my situation, it was very hostile and intense, but that's not every worker's story. And I think it's important to recognize that we all kind of come to this in our own ways. And so I didn't want to have my experience be kind of the seen as kind of the typical or the way most workers might come to this. And we're also, you know, going to jump into some of the broader impacts of unions in this presentation as well. So we're going to start with what is a union? I have my own definition of what a union is, and that is two or more workers coming together to improve their working conditions. However, in Canada and BC, there's a legal definition of what a union is, and legally, a union is an organization that's filed with the Labor Relations Board. So they must meet the criteria that's set out on this slide here, which includes that it's an association of employees that they have, its purposes is the regulation of relations between employers and employees in British Columbia through collective bargaining, and that it's not dominated or influenced by an employer, and that relations between employers and employees and trade unions must be regulated through collective bargaining. Workers don't have many legal protections without certifying with a recognized union. Most workers in BC are covered by the BC Employment Standards Act if they're unless they're in like a federally regulated industry, or if you're like a contract worker or independent worker, there's certain types of work that aren't included in employment standards. But for the most part, if you're not in a union, chances are you're covered by Employment Standards Act. And these laws are updated from time to time by the provincial government. But for the most part, they set the minimum, like the bare minimum standards that an employer must follow. And oftentimes, these aren't sufficient for, our lives in terms of what we need to have a decent life or living conditions. And they also mean that, our working conditions, can be largely dictated for us. And under Employment Standards Act, there are very few protections when it comes to things like firing or discipline and those kinds of things. And so it's important to know that we have rights regardless of whether you're in a union, but under Canadian and provincial law, there's a process that needs to be followed in order to join a union, and that then can afford greater rights. And so we'll talk a little bit more about how these laws are changed and updated by varying governments. There are some recent changes that have taken place that will impact unionization for workers in BC, and we'll talk a bit about that. But I also wanted to touch briefly on this wonderful photo that's sitting behind me here. And these are of dock workers and lumber workers in BC. It was taken in 1889, and it includes Indigenous lumber handlers along with some Chileans and Hawaiians. And I wanted to share this photo because I think it encapsulates the long and rich history of workers organizing in our province, and how for many of them, organizing and collectively fighting for better conditions has been risky, whether it's because they were under racial or colonial oppression, or they're immigrants and, hundreds of languages were being spoken in their workplace. These workers found a way to collectively work together to make their lives and their work better. And so, whether it's workers in various industries, workers across racial lines or gender, this organizing has been going on for centuries and continues to this day. So, and I wish I had a lot more time to go into the history of unions in BC. That could be a whole other presentation, but we'll talk a bit now about the benefits of unions and what that can mean for our workplaces. And so forming a union means that you're coming together to collectively negotiate with your employer the terms and conditions of your workplace. This can often lead to things like greater job security in terms of having, a set process in terms of discipline and termination, rather than, sort of what the employment standards set out, which is kind of at the whim of the employer. And in terms of protections from things like if there's like mergers or a nonprofit dissolves, there's clauses that can be negotiated in a collective agreement that can help protect workers' jobs if they have to transition into a new organization, or what that process looks like. So, and what kind of obligations the employer may have when it comes to ensuring, people are compensated fairly for those kinds of changes. And then, of course, there's also progressive discipline, making sure that everything is done to correct behavior before reaching a point of termination, because we recognize that the impact that can have on someone is life-changing. And so, there's a responsibility there to make sure that everything is done to address, whatever issues are occurring. To not have that impact on the worker or their family. We also Often in unionized workplaces, you'll find there's better wages. There's also more consistent distribution of wages depending on the type of work or the structure of the workplace. We also ensure that there's equitable pay as well as increases that are things that are predictable that you can look forward to or know that they're coming up. In my workplace, prior to unionizing, two people could be doing the same job but be making, very different wages, even though side by side it was basically the same thing. And that's because there was nothing that required that kind of consistency prior to developing our own wage grid and wage system. And then we also, through StatsCan, you can see the difference between non-unionized and unionized workers. And so in BC, unionized workers make on average $4.30 more than a non-unionized worker. And then there's the addition of benefits and retirement savings and that kind of thing. And so often in a unionized workplace, there's health and dental benefits that are negotiated along with things like paid time off, vacation leaves, those kinds of things, sick leave, which has become obviously through this pandemic, a really important benefit for a lot of workers to ensure that, you actually can take the time you need to get well and to not, bring any sort of illness or anything like that into the workplace. And so these are things that are negotiated collectively with the employer. In my workplace, again, we brought in much more consistent benefits, processes in order to access those benefits so that, it wasn't kind of ad hoc or unsure, like you weren't sure if you put in your request if you would get the time off if you needed it. And then the other piece is around health and safety. So every worker in BC has access to the same rights to health and safety. So you have the right to participate in health and safety committees or to have a representative in your workplace. And there's also the right to know what the hazards are and to refuse unsafe work without fear of reprisal. Unfortunately, for a lot of non-unionized workplaces, either a lot of workers don't know that they have these rights or they're afraid to exercise them. Often it's not until a union is formed that we actually get functioning occupational health and safety committees and inspections and actually follow through on those kinds of policies and protections in our workplaces. We also, I think it's important to recognize that, workers have basically spend most of our lives in the workplace, often more time than we spend with family or pursuing our hobbies, our interests. And we often don't have a lot of say in what our workplaces, how they're run or what that includes. And so having a union means that there's a greater democratic participation within the workplace and that we're able to use the information and the knowledge that we have because we're there every day doing the work and we know how things work. We're actually able to have input into the processes and policies that are in place through things like collective bargaining, but also through structures like a joint labor management committee where workers and the employer come together to talk about, what's going on, how can we improve things, that kind of structure. And so that democratic participation, having elected roles and the ability to, actually talk about and bring up issues, again, is one of those things that we fundamentally just don't practice in our workplaces as a society outside of unionization. With unions, there's also a connection to broader industry. And so, you know, there's the ability to connect not only within the union itself, if there's other workers in those same industries, but through organizations like the BC Federation of Labor or the Canadian Labor Congress, there's both a national and provincial ability to discuss industry standards with workers who do similar work and to try to advance you know, the standards for all workers and for the industry on a whole. And there's also obviously connections to workers outside of your industry through those kinds of things, which can lead to kind of a greater sense of, you know, connection, but also I've learned a lot from being able to talk to workers, sometimes in like wildly different industries, who have put into practice or who have found ways of doing things that actually are adaptable to our own workplace. And so I think it's those kinds of experiences that can be really helpful in thinking outside of the box that we may normally work within. Other things that often come through unionization is setting our hours of work, defining what that looks like, you know, what is a work week, what is a work day, and then in addition to that is, you know, how do we do overtime, how is that applied to in terms of being offered overtime, in terms of declining overtime, and then how it's paid out. Oftentimes, based on each specific industry, you know, that's a really important way that we make sure that not only are people having equitable access to, you know, overtime and that, but also the ability to say no if that's not something they want to do. There's also greater predictability in unionized workplaces when it comes to, you know, what processes are in place, what, you know, what's coming up in terms of what's been negotiated in the collective agreement. And so, you know, there's a transparent process that's developed in order to deal with issues and the ability to kind of plan for the future within an organization. And there's also just a greater sense of stability and morale. People tend to stay longer. There's not as much resources put into training and recruiting new workers. And with, you know, that sense of understanding, you know, where you can go in terms of advancement and seeing transparently laid out kind of the wages and benefits, you know, there's more opportunity for folks to feel like, you know, there's a place for them and that they can, you know, remain and want to remain in a workplace because of these things to access or to look forward to. Okay. That was a really long list. and we're also going to talk about the broader impacts of unions because outside of our own individual workplaces, there's a whole world of workers out there. And part of what we do within the labor movement is we work to lift the floor for all workers. So I talked earlier about employment standards being kind of the floor, the minimum, the bare minimum that an employer is obligated and responsible for in terms of the workplace. And so, you know, we do a lot of work to try to improve even those minimum standards. So minimum wage, rights for temporary foreign workers, rights for domestic workers, making sure that there's protections for new and emerging forms of work. So that could include the various kinds of precarious work as well as gig workers is kind of the newer industry that is, you know, there's a lot going on right now to try to make sure that workers are protected in new and emerging economies. We also work to address affordable housing. So The BCGU has an Affordable BC campaign, which I've been working on, and there's a lot being done to try to draw attention to affordable housing as a crisis facing working people all across BC and obviously in many parts of the rest of this country and the world. We also are involved in a lot of international solidarity work, and this is a really, I think, key connection to recognizing that, while workers in countries around the world may have very different conditions, very different rights and government laws, they, we all share a common interest as working people. And so working with people around the world, supporting each other in terms of advancing, our rights and our working conditions is a huge part of what we do, because we know that, borders don't matter when it comes to the situation of workers. And anything that benefits some of us can be a huge benefit for others, even in countries halfway across the world. And also some of the work we do involves like actively saving lives of organizers and activists who are being targeted by particularly oppressive governments or industries. And so it's definitely often really important and critical work. And then finally, we, within the labor movement are working to advance equity and social justice. And that's been a long kind of standing impact of unions, whether it's addressing sexism or racial discrimination, accessibility for workers with disabilities, addressing colonialism and the impact of that on people is a major part of this work, because we know that we can't just try to advance things within the walls of our workplace, that our lives outside of work are a huge part of what impacts us, as well as it's obviously something that comes into the workplace. And we want to make sure that our workplaces are for everyone, and that we are democratically advancing those interests and making sure that we aren't leaving people behind or stepping on their shoulders to create a better world, because obviously that world would be just as flawed if we were to do that. And I would love to give tons of examples of how we do that work, but I'll save it for if there's any questions or answers after the presentation, if people want to hear more about that. So we're going to talk a bit about what it looks like to form a union, what are the legal processes, your rights, and after certification, what can you expect? So when I, back in 2011, called up the BCGU office and was like, hey, it was very awkward because I was like, can I talk to this person? And they were like, who's that? Who's your shop steward? And I was like, we don't have a shop steward because we want to form a union. And they very quickly sent me to the organizing department and got me in touch with an organizer. This is really important because oftentimes people think they have to do this alone, or that there's kind of a sense of opaqueness around what does this all look like. But I think it's really important to emphasize that unionization is a collective process. We want as many people in the workplace as possible to support unionization. And so reaching out and talking to someone, having your questions answered is huge. And whether you have a union in mind, or if you want to reach to the BC Federation of Labor, who can then connect you with a union, those are all great first steps. it's really important for us when we talk about the legal process of unionizing. We are in the midst of changing that in BC. So they're working on changing the current process to a one-step process. Currently, it's two steps. So what happens in this new process is that the majority of workers in a workplace sign union cards. They say they want to join a union, and then you can file for application at the labor board and become certified. This really is being brought in to eliminate this redundancy in unionizing in terms of having a two-step process. So when I joined the BCGEU, we had to sign cards, and legally the threshold is 45% of workers in a workplace need to sign cards, but obviously we want way more than that, because that will be a better indication of whether or not people actually want to form a union. And then once we submitted our cards and filed those with the labor board, we actually had to then hold a vote. And so what happens is they, back then it was a 10-day window, now it's a 5-day window. And they would schedule the vote on the work site. And we would basically go through 10 days of anti-union propaganda from the employer. They would try to intimidate us. And it was a very, very difficult experience. You know, we ultimately, in my workplace, we only had one person vote against joining a union, which was really fantastic that we had such solid support. And obviously, it's a lot of work to deal with the hostilities that we encountered. And by moving to this one-step process, it's a recognition that workers should only have to say once whether or not they want to join a union, and to ensure that their rights are being protected when it comes to forming a union and their ability to do that. And the other thing with making sure that as many people are on board as possible is if the vote to join a union is less than 55% of people in the workplace, the board will call for another election under the current rules. So we want to make sure that as many people as possible actually support this, just because it's obviously an important aspect of unionizing in the first place. And so again, as we move into kind of this new process, there will be basically just if 55% of workers basically sign a card and that gets submitted to the labor board for certification, then the labor board will file for immediate certification for that unit. So it eliminates that whole process with the vote and basically recognizes they've already voted. And again, this is important to recognize when it comes to our charter rights freedom of association. So forming a union is legal in Canada because of these rights. And there's also rules set out for employers or anyone acting on behalf of an employer to not participate, to not interfere with the formation or selection or administration of a trade union or contribute financial or other support to it. And if there's attempts to interfere or fire workers while they're forming a union, this is called an unfair labor practice, and there can be penalties from the labor board if employers engage in this. And that happened in my workplace a number of times during our process. And you know, those luckily, you know, in those instances, there was penalties brought in, and that kind of thing happens. But it's yeah, it's one of those things that does come up, and it's important to recognize, you know, that's not allowed and how to address it. And usually the union you're organizing with will have a great legal department like ours did in terms of challenging those kinds of things at the labor board. And finally, after certification, so you've gone through the whole process of signing cards, maybe you hold a vote, maybe you're, you know, in the future, we don't need to do that. You are now certified as a union within your workplace. What then happens, and it may vary depending on unions, but in our case, you know, you would elect a, you'd hold a meeting, elect a bargaining committee, and then that bargaining committee gets trained and begins working on, you know, doing surveys and talking to everyone in the workplace about what kinds of things would, you know, should be in a collective agreement. What kinds of changes do we want to see, or what are some things that we want to make sure are in that collective agreement as they start negotiations with the employer. And the process to get a collective agreement in place can take some time, because we want to make sure we're hearing from all the workers in the workplace, and we want as much involvement from workers as possible. And so, you know, it does take time to put that together and then to go through the negotiation process. I sat on the negotiating committee in my workplace as an alternate, and I came in partway through, and it makes a big difference in terms of, you know, being able to talk about, you know, what are the things that are happening? How can we make things better? Here's what we support and want to see, and to be able to have those discussions and to come to an agreement on you know, what those conditions look like. And then there's also the process of electing shop stewards, and shop stewards are there to make sure that everybody knows what their rights are, and to collectively address any issues and to enforce the collective agreement. And then there's also occupational health and safety reps, who obviously would be part of the health and safety committees and make sure that you know, those health and safety standards are being met and followed as necessary. Sorry, just checking to make sure I did not miss anything. Yeah, so I think that is it. I wanted to make sure we had time for questions or thoughts or comments. I'm also available, happy to talk to anyone. My email is there. It's carrie.michaels@bcgeu.ca. And if you think of questions after, if you have anything you want to follow up with outside of the webinar, I'm always happy to talk about unionizing, unions, union history. And yeah, so I'll just I'll leave it at that.
Amazing. Thank you so very much. I'm just going to pass up my slide just to remind folks. Great if it actually progresses forward. You can pose a question or make a comment in the chat. If you can't find the chat button, you can hover your mouse at the top or bottom of the screen and it should appear. If you'd also like to pose your question verbally, you can find that by pressing the raise hand button, which is also in the taskbar, and I can allow you to unmute. So we'll just give folks a few moments. Oh, we've got one here. From Ryan, so most BC museums have very small staff members. What should small organizations around one or three staff members know about unions?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I've definitely seen workplaces with that small of staff members form unions. I think most importantly is recognizing that, you know, it's probably a small number of workers who have to talk to each other. And so there's much fewer people to talk to, but it also means making sure that you you do have those conversations and you you know, you talk through kind of like what you're what you're wanting to see, and reaching out to a union that you're interested in to find out if they have similar collective agreements or similar workplaces that have unionized, because having something in place in another workplace makes it a lot more helpful in terms of not having to reinvent the wheel around, you know, what might that collective agreement look like. And so, you know, it is possible is what I mostly want to say. And that, you know, it's also a great way to kind of recognize that there is an industry-wide need for standards and what those working conditions look like, whether it's a 3-person workplace or a 500-person workplace. You know, the work is largely the same. The only other thing that I would also bring up with a small workplace like that, and my workplace had about 50 people, give or take, and you know, it can be really intimidating if you particularly know that your employer is either anti-union or you know, might see it as a threat, that, you know, with so few people that the intimidation can become quite intense. And so the only other thing I would say, and I don't want to like emphasize the negative here, but just the reality of it is that talking to each other about, you know, how you handle that, how you support each other, if that's the case of, you know, what you're experiencing, can really help to make sure that, you know, that that collective effort isn't eroded. And then the other piece that I would just mention for small work sites is connecting with other similar workplaces, whether it's museums in other places or, you know, similar types of workers in your own area who can support you through this and can kind of help encourage you to go through to continue with it, because you know, it's, as I said, with a small workplace, you know, you're largely, it's just means that the pretty much 1 to 3 of you are going to be the representatives in your workplace for your union and your collective agreement. It's not unheard of, but, you know, that just means that you all basically have a role, which is not every workplace's experience. I hope that answers your question. Feel free to follow up if you.
Okay. Thank you. We have a few other questions here. I'm going to start with Pippa. And then Tessa, I saw yours in the Q&A, so I will pass that one along. So Pippa says, I have worked in a union before and the management was not able to be part of the union. As the manager in our museum, would that be the same, or are there opportunities for supervisors or managers to be part of the union?
Yeah, that's a great question. So what I can say is that part of it depends on what management means in your workplace. So there's a very real reason why management is excluded from the bargaining unit. And part of that is because if you have the power to hire and fire people in a workplace, it doesn't make sense for you to be part of the bargaining unit where, you know, you're basically kind of working together collectively in that sense. And there is a need for that manager to be outside of the bargaining unit so that they're making those decisions and doing those things without that kind of influence of kind of the rest of the workplace. And it's also a recognition of the power dynamics of those who are able to hire or fire versus those who you know, carry out the work of the organization. But what I can say around involvement in the union is that, and that's also, sorry, as I pointed out with the Labor Relations Board, explicitly cannot be part of the union or influence the union in that way. So it's also legislated as kind of a boundary around what. But what I would say is that sometimes, especially in, and I come from the nonprofit world where there are like, people are called managers or coordinators or whatever, but don't actually have managerial powers. And in my workplace, we did negotiate to have those people in the bargaining unit. Because they didn't have, when you look at their job, they didn't actually have managerial powers. And so I would just note that for folks who maybe, kind of considering that. I hope that helps.
Thank you, Pupasis. Thank you so much. From Tessa, thanks for your presentation, Carrie. You mentioned that during your workplace's unionization process, you had to sit through a couple of days of anti-union propaganda from your employer. Could you give examples of what is legal for an employer to say about unions versus what is illegal for them to say and or do?
Yeah, and it's actually, so it's unfortunately quite gray. So the employers can say kind of like factual things like you'll have to pay union dues or, you know, the that kind of thing. Employers can't threaten to shut down the workplace. They often do. And again, most unions with really good labor lawyers will file that at the labor board. They also, like in our case, they actually did fire people who ended up, again, being taken to the labor board and having that turned over. Employers will typically, they'll just usually try to instill sort of fear around, you know, you'll have some outside group telling you what to do. And, you know, to some extent they can, you know, they can say those things, but I think it's important to have these conversations with each other that, you know, we are the union, we are democratically deciding, you know, what our workplace looks like. And so, you know, it's not like there's some outside entity that's coming in to dictate the workplace. And so there's lots of different ways that this can come up. And legally, I think the big things to keep in mind is that, again, they can't tell you if you vote to join a union or if you are pro-union, I'm going to fire you, or if you form a union, you know, we're going to shut this place down, or to actually like fire people who they think are union organizers. Those kinds of things are typically very, very much threats to your right as a worker to freedom of association. I hope that's clear. Again, because it's a bit of a gray area and it needs to be taken to the Labor Relations Board, the important thing is to document and to raise those things so that they can be dealt with. I hope that helps.
Thank you so much. I'm just taking a look to make sure that no one has raised their hand to pose a question verbally. Oh yeah, Tessa says thank you in the chat. I'm just taking a look to see that there aren't any other outstanding questions. Amazing.
Just one more thing to add to that too, because sure. It's there's also in the process that currently exists. So if you file cards with the labor board, and then they tell the employer, we've had cards filed, there's a union drive, we're going to hold a vote. There's a period of time. I don't know off the top of my head exactly how much time that is. I feel like in our case, it was like 3 months. There is a period of time where the employer has basically a freeze on hiring and firing or changing the terms of your employment. So like giving people raises because, you know, because there's a union drive and, you know, that kind of thing, like those kinds of things are very important to monitor. And again, filing those with the labor board, or pay cuts to people, that kind of thing. So if they're changing the terms of your work during a union drive, that's typically a flag to address as well.
Amazing. Thank you so much. I'm not seeing any other questions coming in, which tells me that your presentation today was so thorough that everyone has all of their questions answered, but that they're rapidly making notes about the unions that they are, steps they are going to take to unionize, which would be interesting and exciting. So that's absolutely fantastic. Thank you so very much. If anyone does have any questions, Robin is saying thank you to the BCMA and BCGEU. Thank you so much, Robin. If anyone does have any questions, I'll include Carrie's email address in the follow-up email with the copy of the recording. So you can reach out, and I'll link to BCGEU as well. So if you have any further questions, you may find the information there. Let me just toss up my screen one more time here. We've covered the questions. That's super. That brings us to our thank you. Thank you so much, Carrie, for joining us. That was absolutely wonderful. Very comprehensive. Also taking away a fun little tech thing, because I found your screen sharing as a background to be very effective and fantastic. So that was super. And again, thank you so very much for yourself and for our attendees for joining us today and spending the hour learning and demystifying unions. We have some things coming up. As I mentioned in the beginning, we have our joint conference happening in May. Those sessions start tomorrow. Please do join me in the evening from 3 until 4:30 for a very special joint conference, Water Cooler Wednesday Social. We're going to be talking about lessons learned. On May 10th, we will be welcoming Living Wage BC to talk about living wages in BC and its benefit to your site and staff. And then on May 16th, as part of BC Museums Week, we are exploring the state of hate, how museums can identify and address hate in Canada. To register for the session, you can do this so at museum.bc.ca. And thank you again so much, Carrie, and for attendees for joining us. Absolutely wonderful. I hope you have a wonderful afternoon and take care.
Thank you.
Thank you.